Award-winning author Mitchell Jackson takes us inside the drug-ravaged neighborhood and struggling family of his youth while examining the cultural forces, large and small, that led him and his family to today. Jackson explores his tumultuous youth in the other America. His book, Survival Math, takes its name from the calculations Mitchell and his family made to keep safe, to stay alive in their community, a small black neighborhood in Portland, Oregon, blighted by drugs, violence, poverty, and governmental neglect. Mitchell explores the Portland of his childhood, tracing the ways in which his family managed their lives in and around drugs, prostitution, gangs, and imprisonment as members of a tiny black population in one of the country's whitest cities. He discusses sex work and serial killers, gangs and guns, near-death experiences, composite fathers, the concept of hustle, and the destructive power of drugs and addiction on family. Again, the name of the book is Survival Math: Notes on an All-American Family, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Mitchell Jackson to the roundtable this morning. Mitchell, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the program, and I thank you very much for being here and sharing your story with us. What brought you to want to share your story, share the memoir, and to give people an idea of the circumstances that you grew up in Portland, Oregon?
I think that maybe the simplest answer is I'm always asking why. Why am I here in New York City teaching at NYU and writing books and, you know, experiencing this kind of literary life? And then why are some of my cohort home, you know, working maybe menial jobs or jobs they don't want to work, maybe some of them incarcerated? And so just that kind of simple question is, it caused me to kind of reflect not only on what's happening in the immediate area that I grew up in, but also like what are the cultural forces that brought that that environment to be.
The book is broken up into four parts, and you ask questions in each part of the book, and the responses to those questions: who are we? What have we learned? What have we endured? How do we proceed? Let us begin with who are we? It seems to me in many ways that is one of the hardest things to determine as to who are we. And I assume you mean your place in that city, who we are as people that that allow that, and ultimately how we all ultimately try to coexist.
Yeah. Well, I think the kind of the broadest answer to that is we're the descendants of the 20-odd slaves that landed in Jamestown, Virginia in 1619. And so from there, you know, you can move into blacks that were in the South and blacks that migrated for whatever reason, West and North. And so, you know, I'm part of the Northwest group of African descendants. But to me, when I think about who are we, I think about that group first, and then I think about Americans. And then, you know, when we kind of zero down in the lens, and obviously I'm talking about people from Oregon or people from Portland, Oregon, and even further to Northeast Portland where I grew up.
Talk a little bit about Northeast Portland and the makeup of the place and the time that we're talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because I was listening to the intro, and it was like I grew up in a drug-ravaged community. It was blighted by drugs and neglect and, you know, educational deficiencies. I don't think it actually had that in there. I'm kind of extrapolating now. But I think we could also say I grew up under the arm of white supremacy, because all of those things seem to point to, like, let's put a group of people at a disadvantage, you know, poor schools, allowing drugs to come into a neighborhood, either allowing violence or being very punitive with it. So all of these things, I think, yes, they were parts of my community. There was also a lot of love and friendship and, you know, community connections. But the things that kind of talking points about the book seem to be part of a kind of larger project of maintaining a sense of advantage, which you could call white supremacy, or you can say that a group wants to maintain their advantage over everyone else.
How do you feel that you were impacted by that supremacy?
I went to public schools in Portland. I lived in Northeast Portland, which, you know, having studied now, that was part of it was a place that blacks could move because of redlining in the community. So even where I grew up was a part of a kind of city project. My mother struggled with addiction. If you look at the history of cocaine or even in crack cocaine, how it came to be in America and the role that the government played in trying to fund a war that some politicians didn't want to be involved in. I went to jail for selling drugs. There's the kind of punitive crack cocaine laws as opposed to soft cocaine laws. So, I mean, there's a plethora of ways in which I was personally affected by it. Even, you know, to think about the history of, like, how families were disrupted when, you know, slaves are brought over, and how that kind of has been a kind of generational trauma that is evidenced even now. I mean, I grew up in essentially a single-parent home.
Do you immediately, as a family, even in a single-parent family home, do you as a family immediately have to figure out that survival math?
I think you do, whether or not you recognize it or not. So I didn't really think of survival math when I was young, but I did know that, like, you know, if my mom was missing, I had to figure out how to, you know, find an adult that could help us or get some money somehow to put some food in the refrigerator or figure out how I was going to get to school a certain day or whether or not, you know. So those are kind of things that you're really figuring out how to survive, but you don't necessarily, I didn't necessarily define them in that way. I didn't really start thinking about that until it felt like mortal danger, excuse me, that I was in, which was not until I was in my late teens and early 20s.
You do point out, of course, and I mean, you alluded to this a moment ago, but you point out that not only are there these calculations to survive in the struggling community, but other things loom large as well. The love of the family, poetry, the rethinking of masculinity and fatherhood. So these are things as well that played a part in those calculations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you have to have hope in order for you to make survival math calculations, because without hope, like, what's the reason to kind of survive whatever it is? Like, some people just give up, you know. And so that kind of the familial love, the community love, sports was really big in my life, wanting to feel connected to a group, like, all of those things really helped define my decision making process when I was younger.
In telling the story and by addressing the questions that I mentioned a few moments ago, I did say one of the questions is, what have we endured? And I'm curious as to at what point, and even to this day, have you fully come to an understanding of what you endured?
I don't think so. I think that's probably a kind of career-long project of trying to articulate what we've endured and the ways in which we've done it, and then also the circumstances that caused us to have to be in that position. So I think I kind of examined it maybe a little myopically in my first book, which is a novel, The Residue Years, and now I'm expanding that to take a kind of broader view of history. And I think in my next project, I'll do the same thing and kind of turn the lens, maybe dial it down a little more or even turn it in a different direction. So yeah, I think it's a career long thing, but I'm very happy with, the process of discovery that happens while I'm wrestling with these problems.
What were you able to discover that allowed you the career and the writing life that you have now?
One thing I think is that so W.E.B. Du Bois has this idea of double consciousness.
Right.
He's talking about that you know, you always see yourself through your own eyes, but also the eyes of the white man. But I think of this double consciousness in terms of like, I always believe myself to be exceptional, but I also always never believe myself to be much different than the people that I was growing up with. And so I kind of had this duality my whole life where I'm like, I'm better than that, but I'm no better than them. And I think me being able to kind of live with that paradox really informed a lot of the decisions that brought me to this place now, right? So, like, I'm exceptional in that I'm going to try to do well in school. I want to stay in school. I want to read. I want to learn. But then I'm no better than them. So when I'm writing about the same people that I grew up with, there's a level of empathy that you can't get to unless you really understand those people.
When you explore this, is anger a part of the equation and I assume something that's impossible to avoid, I would think.
Well, it isn't a part of the equation when I'm drafting, because I don't think that you can write from a place of anger. I think it colors too much of your perspective for you to do any kind of real critical writing. And so I try to remove the kind of hot emotions as much as I can, other than love. I think that you can kind of operate from a place of care and love, and that's really where I want to be. I remember I had a writing mentor that said, never put yourself above the other in your work. And I think that that's really where I operate from, a place of love and grace rather than anger.
Is that easier if you do it, if you put yourself in that place of love and grace?
Yeah, I think so. I think you might even live a little longer. You know, you'd be less likely to have a stroke or a heart attack. You know, you walk around here mad, your veins popping out your head. You might want to check on that.
Right.
Your blood pressure high.
but it's inevitable, and I think it's very interesting and telling what you just said is that in the writing you have to remove the anger, but in your life as an observer to our world, you have to be occasionally pissed off.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I am occasionally pissed off, and I might even write those feelings down. But before I really like take on the kind of charge of writing about them, I have to move into a space where I can be critical. And anger doesn't allow you to be critical. Well, I don't think it allows you to be most critical.
And because you come from a place of anger, it doesn't give credence to the criticism, right? It brings
right.
You as if you're just criticizing and not coming from a place of, okay, this is where I am, but this is what should concern us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just like getting in an argument with someone. If they're super angry, like, they're not necessarily hearing you, right? So it's like you have to get to a place where you're cooler, where you can actually apply your intellect versus, you know, running on strict emotion.
I find myself asking this question a lot, and I do so because it's one that fascinates me. But do you come out of this experience as working through something, or had you had to work through it already to write it in the way that you did?
Both.
Yeah.
You know, you work through it to a certain point to even want to write about it. You have to work through it to a certain point to, like, have an idea of where you want to go. But there was so much discovery in this book. For me, there's a lot of, you know, historical context that I didn't have a clue about, but there's just so much that I discovered about the kind of history of the things that I think kind of forged me. And I like that. You kind of, with all my writing, like, I start out with an idea, and then you kind of press on it a little bit and push it up against other folks' ideas and history and facts, and then you come out with something else. I think the the mistake would be to be so rigid in your thinking or your objective that you weren't allowing yourself to revise what you thought coming in.
Mitchell Jackson is a clinical associate professor of writing at New York University. He is the author of the new book, Survival Math, Notes on an All-American Family. Mitchell, a great pleasure and honor to have you on our program. I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, the name of the book is Survival Math, Notes on an All-American Family. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.